And now with Wright-Patt being at 38,000, a lot of people will call it the crown jewel of the United States Air Force, because you have the research and development, you have the acquisition, you have the intelligence, you have the foreign military sales. There's so much happening here, and may not see a lot of planes, but it's everything to make sure that those planes are flying all over the world. And with what's going on over with Israel and with Iran now, we're seeing all these submarines and planes and things being deployed to the Middle East. All that technology is from Dayton, Ohio.
Welcome, and thank you for listening to the Next Gen Podcast, a conversational series with members from Energen Wealth Partners at UBS. With an understanding of the family dynamics that can accompany multi-generational wealth, we are experienced in working with you and your family to develop a strategic plan to guide your decisions. Our approach helps provide education across generations to help define and support your long-term vision for your wealth.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Next Gen Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Christie, Senior Vice President, Wealth Management, here with Energen Wealth Partners at UBS Financial Services. Our office is located in Dayton, Ohio, and you can reach us at energen@ubs.com. Today, I have my good friend Jeff Hoagland, the Dayton Development Coalition President and CEO, with us to discuss the great things that are going on around the Dayton region. I've known Jeff for a very long time. He's a UD grad as well. Won't hold it against him that he went to Wright State. I think that's a good idea for his job, having both UD and Wright State connections. I think, Jeff, you came in a little bit, like I left in 87. You came in at 87. Why don't you just give us a little, I know you came down from Elyria and went to Elyria Catholic. And what brought you down to the University of Dayton?
Yeah, so came from Elyria, Ohio, strong Catholic schools up there, Ignatius, St. Ed's, Holy Name, Elyria Catholic. And so a lot of people just came down here. A lot of kids from my school came down here. So I knew Dayton, but my older brother, Brad, who was a year older, he was set to come to UD, but he got a late acceptance to the Air Force Academy. And so I had been down here a couple times. So I knew I wasn't going to one of the academies for many reasons, probably grades was the biggest one. I knew I did not want to go to one of the academies. My brother did. And so I just probably one of the dumbest things I did. I only applied to one school and I got in, fortunately, and it was UD. But I kind of knew from the beginning I wanted to go to Dayton. It was a great size. It was far enough away. It was 3 hours, but close enough where I could get back home. I'm one of nine siblings in the family, so a lot of them are up there. But that's what brought me down here. And you're right, 1987. I graduated from UD in 91, and I've been here ever since. So, you know, this is, Elyria is where I was born, but Dayton's home.
All right. True. And now your brother's the golf coach.
Yeah, UD. So my younger brother, who followed me to UD 2 years later, Gip, he is the director of golf at UD and the head pro at NCR. So he came down. UD was the only school he applied to as well, but he had been coming down visiting me for 2 years while he was in high school.
And I know after graduation, you went and worked with the city of Kettering. Why don't you give us a little history on your working leading up to the coalition?
Yeah. So internships is something that to me is very important. And it's even, I think, more important today with the scarcity of employees that we all need. But when I was at UD, I interned with Montgomery County's Community and Economic Development Department for 2 years. They actually hired me, worked there for about 4 years, and then in 95, moved over to City of Kettering to do community and economic development. Did that for about 6 or 7 years, lived in Kettering, had a couple homes in Kettering, had a lot of good friends there. And then I got my master's, as you had mentioned, at Wright State University. And it was great because my employer, City of Kettering, paid for it as well. We had no kids at the time. My wife, Jennifer, and I didn't have any kids. So it was a little bit easier to do at night. Took me about almost 3 years. But for those listening who are debating, should I get a master's or not, definitely get your master's and try to do it before kids, because once you get kids, as you know, Dan, it's a different life. But while I was at Kettering, I was getting a lot of different experience. And our city manager at the time, Steve Huseman, was a great boss and mentor and wanted to get into the city management life, and Vandalia position came open. The city manager at the time was retiring, and Steve came up to me and said, "Hey, Jeff, if you want to get in the business, this is a great opportunity for you." So I, you know, kind of put my hat in the ring, and they offered me the job, and, you know, I took that, and that was in 2004. Moved up to Vandalia, did that for about 6 or 7 years. And then in December of 2010, took the COO's role at the Dayton Development Coalition. And then in March, my boss went up to run Department of Development at the state of Ohio. And then in June of 11, they appointed me president and CEO. And I've been doing that since then. It seems like 13 years seems like a long time, but it seems like yesterday. It literally does. Yeah.
There's so much excitement going on in the Dayton region. I'm sure it keeps you busy all the time. And I know you've taken a very active role on some boards in the Dayton area. I think did you just join the Children's Hospital?
Yeah, so I just joined the Children's Foundation board. My wife and I, both our boys are adopted through Catholic Social Services. So, you know, we're not on their board, but we've stayed active with Catholic Social Services of the Maumee Valley. So that's something that's near and dear to our heart. There's Wright Brothers Institute. There's just a lot. There's a lot going on. I try to guest lecture at UD and at Wright State with their students. Try to do that once a semester if time permits. And it's nonstop. I'm on a couple national Air Force boards. That's really important for the work we do down here at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. And then two kids that keep us really busy.
Oh, and you could brag a little bit on Charlie because he's a heck of a pitcher down at CJ. So I'm really interested to see how his career develops with baseball. And I know you spend a lot of time with it.
Yeah. So, you know, having the two boys, and I mean, you've had the sports-filled family as well, but you just never know where things are going to go. But our oldest, Charlie, is going to be a senior at CJ. He's committed to go play baseball, be a pitcher at East Carolina. And, you know, Neil Sullivan, one thing that I won't forget is Neil picked up the phone and called me one day. And for those listening, Neil is the athletic director at the University of Dayton. He's like, "Hey, Jeff," he's like, "I know a lot of people may not know much about East Carolina." He's like, "But I know East Carolina, and that is an unbelievable baseball program." To me, it's very similar to UD basketball. Mm. It runs the town in Greenville, North Carolina. So, you know, he's got one more year. He's been, knock on wood, very healthy, pitching really well at a high level, and East Carolina hopefully will take him to the next level.
I'm sure he will. He's a very coachable young man.
Yes, yeah. Good kid.
And then that's the key.
And then our youngest, Jake, is in seventh grade, and he's trying to keep up with older brother. And so he's got a really strong work ethic, and basketball and baseball are his two passions as well.
Good, good. So something that's passionate that you and I are both is the First Four.
Yes.
Here in Dayton. And you've been instrumental in coordinating that over the years. Why don't you give us a little update on how long that's going to keep going and what it's meant economically for the city of Dayton.
Yeah, so the NCAA First Four games, where it's going, who knows? That's the real that's the real answer.
Yeah.
But the backstory behind that is, you know, back in, I think it was 1991 when we had the play-in game. I mean, that happened for many years, and Dayton would get 7,000, 8,000, 9,000 people to watch two pretty bad teams, kind of.
They were bad teams, but their bands were really good.
Yes, and the Dayton community would support it. And then when the NCAA expanded to 68 teams, when they did the First Four, they just talked to UD and said, "Hey, do you want to host these games?" And one of the things that was important to, I think, UD and to the NCAA was having a full arena.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that we did, so JP Nassif, who is a Kettering resident, a UD grad, he did ran the Dayton Development Coalition back in the early 2000s. He runs Jobs Ohio right now, but he is not from here, but he loves Dayton as well. And he's a big sports fan, but he wanted to find a way to get back to the military.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things we did is we worked with UD and the NCAA on a ticket program. And then what we ultimately did is through the Big Hoopla, through sponsors throughout the community, we would buy tickets and donate them to the men and women serving at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base and gave them free tickets to the basketball games. And it started filling up the arena. The First Four really caught on. Mm-hmm. And the arena every night for those games, Tuesday and Wednesday, is usually between 95 to 99 to 100% full based on which team you get. But
They started bringing in a couple better teams, the 10 seeds.
Yes,
so those were very interesting teams to bring in.
Yes.
So that brought Ohio State and some of those other teams, even UD one time.
Yeah, well, one year, I think George Mason, they played here and made a run to the Final Four.
Right.
VCU did. So there have been several teams as the 10 or 11 seed who've made some pretty good runs. Mm. And the ticket program, we've since, you know, we've donated, because we do the big hoopla. It's for the NCAA. We do something with the Dayton Dragons. We do the Schuster Performing Arts Center. We actually do a concert now.
Oh.
We've done it at the Phrase. We're doing it at the Rose. Like Cole Swindell is this year's artist, big, okay, you know, country singer. And so with all these different programs, we've donated, you know, over 125,000 tickets.
Wow.
To the men and women
from
Wright Pat. Yeah. So it's turned into a great program for the community, for the people at the base, but also a lot of people that are at Wright Pat, they come here for 2 or 3 years and then they leave, then they come back. Mm-hmm. But when they come back, they already know what to expect. And mm-hmm. It's just, you know, just one of those little things that I think makes Dayton stand out when we're trying to attract people to this area.
You know, with the base being such a big economic impact on the city of Dayton, I mean, how much of your time would you say you spend working with those folks out at the base and just a normal work week or work month? Is that a lion's share of your time, or do you try to spread it around even more?
Yeah. So the work we do at the Dayton Development Coalition is kind of, there's two major chunks of it. One is Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. So at the end of the day, our mission is to keep companies here, grow them, and then attract new ones to the region. And our region is really a 14-county footprint. We go up into Auglaize County, and we go down to Middletown, to the Indiana border, and then Clark County, halfway to Columbus. So about 1.9 people in our service area, kind of the metro market where the TV stations are, where the newspapers go. When it comes to Wright-Pat, we have a team at the coalition that they wake up every morning, they go to bed every night thinking about Wright Pat. And mm-hmm. So that's probably 50 to 60% of my time. And the other part of the organization is focused on the economic development under Jobs Ohio. So we have 10 industry sectors, if it's manufacturing, aerospace, cyber, healthcare, advanced manufacturing. We have another team that focuses on companies like Honda, Joby, Sierra Nevada Corporation, and then, you know, a lot of our existing companies here. And it's kind of the trickle-down effect is we don't do retail, we don't do housing, we don't do service, but if we're kind of at the top working, like Honda, they're building in Fayette County, mm-hmm. they're building
It's a battery plant.
Yep, exactly, mm-hmm. a battery plant. And, you know, with their footprint in Ohio already, that battery plant will supply to the existing Honda facilities, but they're investing $4 billion. They're going to create over 2,000 jobs. Mm-hmm. The facility is the size of 78 football fields.
Oh my gosh.
And it's at the intersection of I-71 and I-35 in the interesting spot. It's where the outlet malls are.
The Jefferson.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And uh-huh. The interesting part is, so Intel's going in the greater Columbus area mm-hmm. in New Albany. And that was kind of coming out of COVID with the reshoring and onshoring. Ohio, you know, Jobs Ohio, the state of Ohio, we were doing a lot of things behind the scenes to get ready for the rebirth of America and Ohio, since we relied so much on suppliers out of country. And we saw what happened during COVID. Oh, yeah. It was awful. Good. So other states were doing the same. I think they were slower to it than Ohio was. And we were kind of ready to catch the ball when things got back to normal. And Intel, that was the first one. And once Ohio landed Intel, I really think it caught the eye of people throughout the world, not mm-hmm. just the United States, the world. And the Honda site, which in Fayette County, we'd been showing people it for 20 years. Mm-hmm. There's over 2,000 acres that this one property owner had, but it was so expensive to bring the utilities there. You couldn't do a small user, but when Honda came with that size of development, the numbers started to work. But Honda came, we had two other huge manufacturers at the same time looking at the same plot of land. And it was kind of who signed on the dotted line first, and Honda/LG, because they partnered with LG to do that. But from a geographic area, it hits four metro markets. It hits Dayton, it hits Columbus, Cincinnati, and then you get up into the Chillicothe area. So they're grabbing from four workforces.
Okay.
And that was instrumental. Now that area is growing out because the suppliers that Honda is going to need, they're going to want to be right next door to them. So, you know, that's just one example of so many.
The moral to that story is you want to be a farmer
in
Fayetteville County.
Yes, yes, right, yeah. In New Albany and Columbus, that happened.
Right.
And these big mega sites, as we call them, they need the utilities. You need to be ready, because companies these days, they want to be able to turn dirt in months, not in years. And so back to to your original question, you know, I probably spend half my time doing Air Force, 50 to 60% doing military work, but the other 40 to 50% doing the general economic development work. But we have an amazing team, Julie Sullivan, Dave Burrows, Elaine Bryant, that, you know, they are just top notch and they just get it done. And then I can work on some of the higher level things as well.
You made a comment before about interns and being an intern and the idea of a workforce. Not all kids are met for college. Is there a increasing demand for the trade schools in the greater Dayton area to kind of get the workforce up to speed with some of those plans? Or what do you see happening? Because I'm hearing more and more kids are not going to college, whether it's the expenses or just not something they want to do, but right. The trades.
Yeah.
And where is the city of Dayton going with maybe getting those kids up to speed?
Yeah. So no, that's a great question because workforce is the number one topic now. So 10 years ago, probably not even, probably 8 years ago, when we're working with companies to bring them to Ohio or to the greater Dayton area, usually it was, okay, do you have the building or do you have the land? Mm-hmm. And then it was, okay, what incentives do you have for us to move here? They never talked about workforce. Now it's completely flipped. They look, and these people, they're experts. They've got their data, the data analytics are running, and they kind of know the areas they want to be in. But if you don't have the workforce, or if the numbers don't look appealing to these companies, they don't even come anymore. So it's not, do you have the land? Do you have the incentives? It's, do you have the people? So to your point, the people. So when we went to school, Dan.
A long time ago.
Yes, long time ago. But it was, everyone needs a four-year degree. And I think trade schools and community colleges were kind of looked down on mm-hmm. a little bit. It's completely flipped. So I think, and the data shows this, there's less people going to the 4 years. Mm-hmm. We see that in the numbers, you know, in Ohio as well. But the community colleges, vocational schools, and then even high schools, you're seeing it, where companies are working directly with the high schools, with the vocational schools, and with the community colleges. I mean, they're doing the four years are still critical. We mm-hmm. need the engineers. We need the accountants. We need those. But what we're seeing is the Sierra Nevada corporations of the world, they do military aircraft modifications. So they need mechanics, MRO type of workers, mm-hmm. skilled trades. They're partnering the Hondas of the world, the Intels of the world. They're partnering with the community colleges, with the vocational schools and the high schools. Mm-hmm. So they see a different pipeline. The state of Ohio has a certificate program where they work with companies to reimburse them to get students to work with the company. They reimburse them for their costs. And then hopefully those students stay with them. So that's a huge, and it's not even a trend. It's just, that's the way it's happening right now. Will it flip in 10 more years? You know, we don't know, but there is a strong emphasis. Plus, the community colleges and the
I think we have one of the hidden gems of Sinclair College here. And yeah. I'm sure you spend time with those folks there. Is their enrollment steady, increasing, decreasing?
Yeah, so Sinclair is, we've got Clark State, you know, right. in Up Clark County. Yep, mm-hmm. we've got Sinclair. And Sinclair is actually in the Cincinnati area as well, so down in the Mason area. So they've really grown, but they're doing exceptionally well. I think a lot of these community colleges have been smart, that they've partnered with the four-year institution. So some kids can go to community college for 2 years mm-hmm. at a much lower cost, mm-hmm. and then those classes then roll over and then they can get their 4 year, but the community colleges are doing extremely well still today. I mean, in Columbus, it's happening. In Cincinnati, it's happening. Up in, you know, where I'm from, Lorain County Community Colleges has one of the best reputations in the state. They are huge in microelectronics mm-hmm. and with Intel building their, you know, I didn't even mention the number with Intel. I mean, their facility, just phase one, is $28 billion.
Wow.
And that's for two fabs. And with the CHIPS Act that was passed, their plan is to build 8 fabs. That's going to be over $100 billion, $150 billion just in capital and equipment. So there's a long play in this. It's mm-hmm. it's going to take that long just for the construction to be done. And that's the other angle in this. What we're seeing in Ohio is the kind of the rebirth, the renaissance of the trades workers. Mm-hmm. We have so much construction going on in Ohio. And if it's in Cleveland, if it's in Youngstown, if it's in Columbus, Dayton, Cincinnati, there is so much work for these electrical engineers, contract. Mm-hmm. I mean, they've got work literally for the next 10 years. And we're not talking just 40 hours a week. They're working 60, 80 hours a week because there's a lot of pressure to get these buildings built quicker, faster.
So a different question. Do you see unions coming with this work increase, or is it just the average labor? I mean, how do you work with the unions in the Dayton area or even around Ohio? Yeah.
So Ohio, I mean, the work that we do, to us, it doesn't matter if they're union or non-union. A lot of the contractors, for example, some are union shops, some are not. Mm-hmm. But to us, it doesn't matter. To us, it's if we're working with the Sierra Nevada Corporation, who's mm-hmm. building, they've built two hangars at the Dayton Airport and they're getting ready. We're finalizing some things, but they're going to build probably 3 and 4, and they do work for the Air Force. And, you know, they're going to go through the process to pick their contractor. So if it's a union shop or a non-union shop, you know, that's their call. It doesn't matter to us. There's shops, there's companies that we work with that are unionized. There's companies that are non-unionized. We stay out of politics.
Sure.
We stay out of unionization, but we work with the unions if the company is doing it. So to us, it's, you know, it really doesn't matter. It's what the company really wants and what the company needs. Mm. And it's, you know, it's their decision. Like Honda, they're non-unionized,
right.
But there's other companies that are unionized, Ford, for example. Mm-hmm. So to us, it doesn't matter. It's, you know, it's mm-hmm. the company's decision.
They're well-paying jobs, no matter how you slice it.
And that's the other thing is, you know, you hear these comments about, well, we need prevailing wage. We mm-hmm. need these jobs today. I mean, you can go out by the Dayton Airport to one of the big logistics and distribution facilities, these people are making $25-30 an hour.
Sure.
I mean, that's well above minimum wage, mm-hmm. Like double. They're getting benefits. I mean, these jobs, Sierra Nevada Corporation, you know, when they start hiring these MRO mm-hmm. types of positions, starting salary is $75,000.
Wow.
That doesn't include healthcare and other benefits. I mean, right. That's a very livable wage in Dayton, Ohio.
Fuyao coming to the city of Dayton has had a huge impact as well. Do you see that growing over the years, or is it pretty well at max?
So Fuyao came, they took, for our listeners who aren't familiar, they're in the city of Moraine. They took the GM, the vacated GM plant, and turned that into probably one of the largest automobile glass facilities in the country. Mm. It's one of the bigger ones in the world. They have room for growth there. They definitely do. That facility over there is huge. Mm-hmm. But they are supplying glass to all the major car companies and the Safe Lights of the world. They're doing, but that industry has been critical for the rebirth of the, back in 2010, 11, 12, things were bad. GM closed, Delphi closed, all these car companies.
I think between Fuyao and Wind Supply down in Moraine has just been dramatic turnaround.
Yeah, so Wind Supply is a little hidden gem that they're national, but they're headquartered here mm-hmm. and they do amazing work. They are a philanthropic organization that gives back to the community, and we're lucky to have them here. And you're right, Moraine, just a small little town of 10 to 12,000 people. They got a couple of giants there.
And the Blueberry Cafe.
Don't forget about that. Absolutely.
You got to get there for a breakfast. Absolutely. So around the University of Dayton, a lot of empty land around the University of Dayton, any new things happening down in that direction?
Yeah. So around UD, so I remember back, you probably remember, there was Bob's Big Boy.
Food poisoning.
That was the end of the campus right there at Main Street or at Brown Street.
Yeah.
But when NCR left, you know, I'm a big believer in things happen for a reason. And as bad as it was when NCR announced they were moving to Georgia, what I've realized, and not being from Dayton, but being here for such a long time, I realized that Dayton doesn't quit. It might hurt or sting for a minute, but what they do is they roll up the sleeves and they find a way to persevere. And at the time, it looked awful, but I'll give UD a lot of credit because I remember they had a plan prior to NCR leaving of what was their campus going to look like and how, because they were landlocked for the most part. But then when NCR left, it gave them an opportunity, and Dr. Curran and the board made a bold decision to buy all that land from NCR. And when you go back then, and I mean, there was probably a lot of conversations about financially, can we afford it? Should we do it? Is it the right thing to do? But I give them credit for being so forward thinking, because here we are 12, 14, 15 years later, and we've got Copeland has a building where NCR used to be. And then GE Aerospace, they have a huge R&D facility that does a lot of work with the military there and some commercial work, but it's a big jet engine testing facility. And then you kind of keep going. There's, I mean, in essence, it goes to the river now.
Yeah.
They own the UD Marriott. they own the basketball arena across the river. Mm-hmm. And then you come back and then you look at the old fairgrounds, which is at Main and Stewart. Mm-hmm. And that's about a 37-acre tract of land that UD and Premier purchased. It's owned by On Main, which is a private nonprofit organization. And they have a plan for a mixed-use development. So office users similar to Copeland and GE along Stewart Street. And mm-hmm. then on Main Street, I think you'll see some supportive retail, but then you'll also see a housing component. So it's going to be a mixed use development. I think I've been looking at a lot of sites in our community, in our region, you know, for 30 years. And for a site like this to pop up in an urban core like Dayton or Cincinnati or Cleveland, they usually don't happen because you usually have to buy parcels of land or buildings one at a time. It takes a long time. And mm-hmm. sometimes you get holdouts and it doesn't happen. But this is green space. Well, one would say brown space because it's pretty, there's a lot of dirt there, yeah, the old track. Yeah. And we're really close, Dan, to seeing the kickoff of that development and redevelopment here in Dayton, Ohio. And I think that's going to be a catalyst for Dayton and for everything around there. So it's pretty exciting to see some of these projects that we're planned for. And in today's world, it seems like everybody wants something to happen tomorrow. And it doesn't. You're right. It takes time. And this is one where they had patience. They did it the mm-hmm. right way. And it's going to be a catalytic changer, and in my opinion, for years to come.
Yeah. Are they going to keep the roundhouse or that octagon? I don't know what that building is.
Yeah. So the roundhouse. Yeah. So you're right. So yeah, that is going to be a part of the plan that's going to get redeveloped. I don't know exactly what, but I could see some sort of retail component. I don't know if it's a microbrew. I don't know if it's multiple restaurants. I don't know, but they're going to keep that. I've been through it multiple times. There's actually two floors. You can walk up the steps and get to the second floor and walk around it. It's really cool. So whatever, I know they have thoughts and plans, but it's going to be some cool space. And I drive by there. My office is right across the street from it. So right. I see it every single day. But knowing that this site is about to be redeveloped, this is a once in a 100-year opportunity. And
sure.
And here we go.
Yep. Yep. So you allude to it a little bit, but one of the things that I find fascinating is the whole Joby helicopters. I don't know exactly how it's all going to come together, but what do you see for the future with Joby?
So Joby, they are traded. They're not a startup. See, that's the thing is a lot of people think Joby is a startup, but they're not. They are a public company. They are international, and they are in the eVTOL world, as they say, the electric vertical takeoff and landing type of—
Not a helicopter.
Okay. They would probably smack you if you said helicopter, but I won't do that.
Okay. Thanks, Jeff.
So this is a market. So back about 10, 12 years ago is when the drones really picked up. And with the Air Force Research Laboratories, their headquarters here, a lot of that drone work has the testing and evaluation done here. And it's done in Springfield at the old Springfield Beckley Airport. We have something called Beyond Visual Line of Sight where they can do training and they can fly drones without seeing them from eye to eye. It's all done on radar. We were one of the first in the country to do that. And that was a strategy, you know, 12 years ago to try to be the leader in the country in drones. Hmm. Well, the Chinese, in essence, bought about 90% of the drone market. So that was problematic from a Department of Defense standpoint. So what happened is the Department of Defense, they were also looking at other cutting edge technologies. And that's where these electric vehicle takeoff and landing companies came into play. But one of the things that the Air Force and DOD said was, we're going to heavily invest in this for many, many reasons and ways. And if you look at the vehicles, they're very quiet. Mm-hmm. They're not stealth, but they're very quiet. They can get in and out of places. If it's water, if it's caves, Afghanistan, other places, they can get in and out. They can put payload on them. So there's a lot of things they can do. So they wanted to invest in this technology. But one of the things they said to the companies is, if we invest in you, you are not selling to the Chinese. Because as we sit here today, China is our biggest threat. You know, mm-hmm. Russia is in a big war with the Ukraine. Russia has nuclear weapons, which they are still a very serious adversary. But China's goal by 2049 is to overtake the United States as the world's leader in everything. Mm-hmm. And that's in writing, it's factual, it's out there. So the Air Force, with the Air Force Research Laboratory headquarters here, we are in a position where we were able to talk with a lot of these eVTOL companies, and the Air Force was funding them, doing work with them on the military side, but there's a huge commercial side of it. And last September is when Joby Aviation announced that they're going to build their manufacturing facility here in Dayton, Ohio. And there's two components of it. There's the military side, and then there's the commercial side, because what they would ultimately like to do is be able to, and they're working with the FAA because they have to get a lot of approvals, and there's still time that's needed to get it. But I mean, literally going, we'll use an example, going from Dayton to Columbus to Cincinnati to Cleveland, wherever, in these, it's kind of like the Jetsons, in these vehicles, and they're manned, they're not autonomous. So there is a
pilot.
They do have the technology to do it autonomously, but that's a whole different level with the FAA.
That's taken Uber to a whole nother level.
Well, it's funny. Uber is invested in, so there's about five of these companies that are leading right now. They're in the lead. Joby is one of them. And there's others that we're working with as well. But I mean, I would have never have thought 10 years ago, we'd be this far along with literally us being able to, you know, UD plays Cincinnati in a couple months.
December 20th on a Friday. Not that I know that date or anything.
Yes, like there I got you my go. I've got my tickets too. But you could literally take an Uber via the air from Dayton to Cincinnati in 15 minutes versus an hour with traffic. We're not that far away, but the manufacturing is to us. We have not had aerospace manufacturing in the Dayton area since World War II.
Wow.
And Joby's going to do it. Sierra Nevada Corporation, they're going to be doing it. So we've seen really the pendulum swing back to where we were the world's leader with the Wright brothers in the early 1900s to, you know, nothing for a while. And then it's all coming back. And a lot of it's coming back because the Air Force and Wright-Patterson Air Force.
Sure, sure.
But there's a commercial component, a huge component that comes along with it.
Right, right. So you don't see the overall employment numbers at Wright-Patt Air Force going down, but maybe increasing over the destination for more military and civilian workers as well.
Yeah. So at Wright-Patt, and it was just announced on Monday by Congressman Turner, but back in 2005 is when the last BRAC, base realignment and closure, happened throughout the country, where they were consolidating bases, in essence, closing bases to be more cost efficient. Wright-Patt was a gaining site. Wright-Patt in 2005, we were at 19,000 employees. We are now at 38,000 employees.
Wow.
We've doubled our employment since 2005. And what people forget is, as Wright-Patt was growing in 2010, 11, 12, you know, up into the almost 28,000, that's when our economy crashed. GM, Delphi, and we lost 30,000 jobs in the Dayton region. And that was only 12 years ago. I mean, it wasn't that long ago,
right?
12, 14 years ago. But what has happened since is Wright-Patt has grown to 38,000, but our other sectors have caught up and passed where we were when we lost those 30. So we're ahead of where we were, in a large part is Wright-Patt was able to stabilize things while we were trying to catch our breath.
Yep.
And now with Wright-Patt being at 38,000, a lot of people will call it the crown jewel of the United States Air Force, because you have the research and development, you have the acquisition, you have the intelligence, you have the foreign military sales. There's so much happening here, and may not see a lot of planes, but it's everything to make sure that those planes are flying all over the world. And with what's going on over with Israel and with Iran now, we're seeing all these submarines and planes and things being deployed to the Middle East. All that technology is from Dayton, Ohio.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So it's pretty fascinating.
It is fascinating. So let's just switch gears a little bit. And maybe this is our last topic, but how many more gas stations can we take on in the greater Dayton area? I'm excited about Buc-ee's, but is it me, or is it the number of sheets that are coming in and the truck stops? You go by the UD Arena, there's the Love. Do you even go there?
So it's funny because, you know, I'll put my old city manager hat back on. And I remember when I was in, you know, Kettering, it was the drugstores. This is the same thing with gas stations that we had with Walgreens, CVS, you know, every corner one was popping up. And as a city manager, the residents were furious.
Sure.
And that's what's happening now with these gas stations. But I think what's happened, this is, I don't work in that sector.
Okay.
That's the retail market. But you know, I look at what Speedway is and what they started. Their headquarters was in Ohio. They were purchased by 7-Eleven.
Right.
But they make their money on food.
Sure.
And it's not the gas. No. People think it's the gas. No, it's not. It's the food. But Speedway, back in the day, that's where they were making all their money. And all these, I think, other, I don't know why it took them so long to figure it out. But once they did, and you know, as much as my wife and I have been traveling with Select Baseball.
Right.
And you mentioned Buc-ee's. It's funny because my son played in, you know, Atlanta three times, Alabama. They hit a Buc-ee's. They've got the cleanest bathrooms. They've got amazing food.
Like 117 versions of beef jerky.
Yeah. It's amazing. But you go into Sheets, you go into they're all nice. They're clean. They're new. And it's making the other gas stations up their game.
Sure.
Because if they don't, no one's going to go to them, but it's just one of those convenience factors. Mm-hmm. But what they're doing is it's customer service. It's high quality. If you have good food and, I mean, I think it's probably impacting the Burger Kings, the McDonald's and
Absolutely.
Those types of stores. Yeah. So it's been fascinating, but cities around us and, you know, in not just in Dayton, but in Ohio and other places, they're struggling because their residents are saying, hey, we've got too many of them.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, where you live and where I live, that conversation is daily. So cities are, you know, they're kind of putting a moratorium on them now because they're kind of deciding.
Well, I think Centerville did a little bit there. The one right there on Far Hills.
But they've also got to be careful not to infringe on property rights. So there's a lot going on there and it's just, it's fascinating to watch, but it's a hot topic about everyone is the gas station.
I can imagine. Yeah. So Jeff, we'll just kind of close out here a little bit, but is there any topic that maybe I missed asking you about or something else that is going on at the Dayton Coalition that you would really want to talk about? I leave it open to you. Yeah.
Well, thank you. No, one, thanks for having me on, Dan. I really appreciate it.
Oh, absolutely.
Just a couple of things I think as the listeners are hearing us wrap up is one, for those that aren't familiar with Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, it's the state's largest single-site employer. It has an economic activity in the Dayton community of $16 billion a year. $16 billion. Huh. It's got 38,000 employees. When you multiply that out, it impacts 81,000 people, 81,000 direct indirect jobs around Wright-Patt. And it is the intellectual capital of the United States. Wow. States Air Force. So much runs through Wright-Patt that people just don't know because they equate planes to an Air Force base. And we have a reserve unit here, the C-17s, but it is an economic development and economic driver for our community. But with that being said, it also drives, and that's the work we do through Jobs Ohio. We can't just rely on aerospace and defense. We have to diversify our economy. And I think that's what we saw 20 years ago. We had a lot of our eggs in one basket. Mm-hmm. We've been able to diversify once we've come out of the Great Recession and then the pandemic. We are more diversified as a community than we've ever been. We are stronger as a community than we've ever been. And looking at the pipeline and the companies and projects we're working with, the future is very bright. So I'm very bullish on Dayton and on the greater Dayton community. And I think the best is yet to come.
I agree 100% with you, Jeff. And thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to come and spend some time with UBS clients and other folks that'll be tuning into this. It was fantastic. So just to say to our listeners, thank you for joining. And again, you can find all this at our website, UBS Intergen. It's intergen@ubs.com. So we'll have this probably out shortly. And again, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me, Dan. Absolutely. Appreciate it.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of the Next Gen Podcast. To learn more about our team and to join our exclusive educational events throughout the year, check out our website at advisors.ubs.com/Intergen. If you have any suggestions on episodes you'd like to hear, let us know by emailing us at intergen@ubs.com. And if you liked this episode, be sure to follow us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify to hear more.
This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.